You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people. But somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast, with more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, the book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the Signal. For the first time, all 3 books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live, inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the Signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.
Let's try that again. Hello, it's Safety Wars for Thursday, March 12th, 2026. How's everybody doing out there? Welcome to Thursday the 12th. And we know what Thursday the 12th is followed by Friday the 13th. Oh, yeah. 2 months in a row. Friday the 13th. Today was not a nice day. We'll leave it at that. We had 81 degree. We had an 81 degree day yesterday.
Sorry about that. We had some technical difficulties here. Give it a second here.
Clear up. Okay. Yeah, so we had an 81 degree day yesterday here in where I am in the New York, New Jersey area. And today it was 41 degrees and snowing. It's snowing right now. Not so nice. And yeah, I meant to hit this, right? Safety Wars. Safety professionals, get off your knees. Get out of that trailer. Get away from the coffee pot. Get away from the donuts. If you're in the Northeast, get away from the bagels and cream cheese and lox. Even though it's delicious, you know, not something you want to do. A lot going on today. We're going to talk a little bit about everything today. We'll see how far we get. Now, reportedly, there was we're preparing for cyber attacks and everything else here in here in the United States, and we'll just say whoever Iran has a problem with. I think that some other people are taking advantage of this situation, maybe part of it, and have nothing to do with this or them. And some of them are probably with them, and, you know, it's just all coincidence. That being said, you can say, well, how come you didn't release the video last night until tonight? Because our OBS system that we were using along with our internet connection was not working so well last night. I wonder if it's part of that situation there with the cyber attacks. Don't know. As far as government press releases today from the EPA and OSHA, we're going to go over them briefly after our introduction here. So we'll hit you back in a minute here.
Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activities. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Yes, it's Safety Wars. We're going to just jump right into it. We're going to start out with EPA news. I mean, I heard some comments from some listeners. Right, man, you are a couple of days ahead. Yeah, we are. Now, this is actually a site that I read about when I was, the first time I was in college. EPA adds Gelman Sciences Incorporated in Ann Arbor, Michigan to the Superfund National Priorities List. Today, the US EPA added the Gelman Sciences Incorporated site in Ann Arbor to the Superfund National Priorities List. List of the nation's most contaminated sites. With a Superfund designation, EPA will use statutory authorities to hold the company responsible for near and long-term actions to more expeditiously address possible risks to human health and the environment. Thanks to Administrator Lee Zeldin's leadership, EPA is making good on its promise to the community to protect drinking water resources. Hold on right here. I love it. Everyone knows I'm on the air, so they call me. Right. So that was Regional Administrator Ann Vogel. From 1963 to 86, Gelman Sciences Incorporated manufactured medical filters, a process that discharged wastewater containing 1,4-dioxane into surrounding ponds, creating a contaminated groundwater plume. Health risks of 1,4-dioxane include liver and kidney damage and cancer. The 1,4-dioxane groundwater plume is approximately 3 miles long and 1 mile wide and has migrated into aquifers that supply drinking water. And it goes on and on and on with this. Right, I wonder how long it took to get on the NPL list. I think it was a long time here coming. All right, and we had mentioned yesterday they are reviewing cleanups at many, many Superfund sites. They had to normally do a four-year type of situation where they review things. Here we have from the Department of Labor, a couple of things going on here. We have the unemployment insurance weekly claims. Now, as I always point out, whenever we discuss this, right, these statistics are a snapshot. Here we have the seasonally adjusted initial claims that you're looking at here. And really, it goes within, what am I looking at? Maybe a 50,000 job standard deviation on one or the other. So what's my point? When people are freaking out, oh, there's unemployment, blah, 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 unemployment, and they start screaming and yelling and everything else, not really. Not really. We got things go up, go down, and here's last March to February of this year, and you see it's holding claim in the millions. It goes up a little bit, goes down a little bit. Not seasonally adjusted initial claims. Again, we're dealing with 100,000 this way, 100,000 that way. The economy ebbs and flows. That's what my point is. U.S. Department of Labor awards more than $1.6 million to assist workers affected by closure of Nebraska beef processing plant. Seems like we're getting these stories coming out once a week. I wonder if they're, or a couple of times a week, I wonder if this is an increase or we're just noticing it more. That's my question here. U.S. Department of Labor today awarded $1.6 million plus in the Nebraska Department of Labor to support employment and training services for eligible individuals in communities affected by the closure of the Tyson's Food Beef Processing Plant in Lexington. On January 20th, Tyson Foods closed its beef processing plant in Lexington, resulting in the layoff of 3,200 workers. This is an unprecedented event for the Lexington community, affecting one-third of approximately 10,500 residents. Right, so my question is this. What's going on here? Are they not processing as much beef, I hear? You know, price of beef went up. Not as many cattle. I don't know. One thing's for sure. They're not going to be, you know. Right. So, terror in the heartland. We face a situation here in this country. I've been hearing for a long time, since sometime way before 9/11, about sleeper cells during the Cold War. The Soviet Union allegedly had pre-placed nuclear weapons in the United States. I mean, we've been hearing this stuff for an awful, awful long time here with everything. I mean, no. And the question always comes, are they out to scare us? Are they out to, like I always point out on this show, are they out to manipulate us? I don't know. So today, this is out of Michigan, right? What we know about the Michigan synagogue attack. We've been having synagogue attacks here, unfortunately, for a very long time. I'm not minimizing that. Even in my own community, there's a lot of anti-Semitism. That is in Rockland County, New York, Orange County, New York, because you have a high ultra-Orthodox or Haredi or Hasidic community here. And, I mean, there's stuff all the time. I mean, they don't trust, with good reason, I might add, a lot of the public service organizations, police, fire, EMT, to treat their own people, plus they have some you know, religious beliefs, right? Well, like segregation of men and women. So they have their own ambulance services, their own security services. That's the appropriate words, security services. They also have tried to get their own fire department in there, which was a bunch of guys driving around in a pickup truck with a bunch of fire extinguishers. They said, you know, that's not such a good idea, the local fire chief said over there. That was over in, I believe, Ramapo, East Ramapo, area of New York. And, you know, this is anti-Semitic attacks all the time. A friend of the program, I'll say Tony, who is a security consultant. He supplies security for that community. And I tell you what, anti-Semitic attacks often go unreported and everything else. So I don't know if this is because, and don't lie, unless they have specific information, this attack in Michigan may or may not be related to what's going on in the Middle East. I mean, it's suspect. I mean, we definitely had a situation in New York over the weekend where we had a protest going on, a group protesting a white supremacist, and one group members apparently came from Pennsylvania of part of the protests, right? Came from Pennsylvania and threw a bomb, a homemade improvised explosive device that did not detonate into the crowd, two of them. Been all over the news here. That probably was terrorism with this. I don't know if this has been terrorism or not. So around 1:30 p.m. this afternoon, police responded to reports of shots fired in the area of Temple Israel in West Bloomfield, a suburb of northwest of Detroit, Oakland County. Sheriff Michael Bouchard said. Bouchard said a man drove through the doors of the building down a hallway. This happened in this area to them a couple of weeks ago. and that security engaged the suspect with gunfire. Law enforcement sources told CBS News the suspect exited the vehicle with a rifle and was confronted and killed by a synagogue security. Boucher, however, said the suspect was found dead in the vehicle and said he couldn't specify he was killed by security. It's not immediately clear if the suspect fired any shots. Right, there is one story here. With that, shooting at Old Dominion University being investigated as an act of terrorism. The suspect, his name, I won't mention his name. He probably wants his name mentioned. A shooting at Old Dominion University in Virginia on March 12th is being investigated as a potential act of terrorism, according to FBI Director Cash Patel. One person was killed and two others were injured during the incident. The suspected gunman is also dead after being subdued by students. In a post on X, Patel said the FBI has launched a terrorism investigation. Okay, I think there's one more story here. Hold on. Now, allegedly, all right, I don't have the story up here, but let me type it in real quick. California sleeper cells. Now, this is according to, let's see, do we have a legitimate thing? This is from the Wall Street Journal from March 12th, which is today. Trump briefed on Iran sleeper cells in the United States. President Trump said he had been briefed on the presence of Iranian sleeper cells in the U.S. and was monitoring threats against the country. We know where most of them are. We have our eye on most of them, I think. I don't know how you can say that, right? With that. Now, there's a report out there, and it's been unsubstantiated, that there are ships out there in the Pacific off the coast. And I don't know how far off the coast they need to be, because apparently these drones are able to travel hundreds of miles. So they could be a couple hundred miles off the coast just waiting to launch an attack on the western west coast. I don't know if that's true, not true. If it's Guvno, not Guvno, I don't know. Now, one thing's for sure. One thing's for sure. If you see something, say something, number one. Number two, we are not in control of these groups, meaning us, meaning Jimmy Polzel, meaning any of us as individuals aren't in control. So what ends up having to happen is we have to be vigilant, extremely vigilant on what we see, what we do, where we go. You got to be prepared for all different kinds of disasters. You could check back with September. And I had mentioned every September that we've been on the air for the last 5 years, we have talked about disaster preparation. Now is the time to prepare. With the price of gas going up like it is, what I've done, and I'm not going to tell you to do anything that I haven't done, and I'm not going to tell you everything I've done, but I'm not going to, but I will tell you, but everything I'm telling you that you should do, I have done. How's that? Gas prices are going to be going up. I would go to the gas station almost every day and fill up and top off. That's what I would do. There's talk out there, and I've heard it from a couple of people, about the 1973 and 1978 oil crisis. Right, 73 was from the OPEC. 78 was primarily with Iran into 79. I remember I was in the third grade on that. And I remember hanging out at the gas station with my old man, usually my old man, right? We'd be there and we'd be in that old 69 Barracuda, my favorite car. And we're sitting there, for hours and hours and hours on end waiting for gasoline. There was a shortage. And in New Jersey, they had odd and even days, meaning your license plate on an odd was odd, you had one day, and if it was even, you were allowed to go the other day. And in 73, that is when, and 78 again, that was when the era of the nice big pleasure crafts ended. Right after that, you really didn't see that pleasure crafts, meaning on the water, right? Big boats ended because no one could afford that, or they'd sit at the dock, right? So you'd launch it, start it up, and then just like hang out and at the dock all summer, making hamburgers on the grill, hanging out at the boat. You really never went out. Maybe you went out three or four times just to run the engine. The other thing was, right, starting after 73, that was when they started, 74, 75, you start to get into more fuel-efficient vehicles, smaller horsepower, everything else. And the cars from, you can see from the early 70s, the Oldsmobile 98 was one of note, was huge. They called them, they called those cars like land yachts. Then it went into small. So this was smaller cars, and now we have what we have today. All this stuff was impacted because of the 73 and the 78 gas crisis, where they came up with this, and then then the whole global warming thing came in, which was just rescinded by Donald Trump, most of those policies. So we don't know where this is going to go. We're not in control of this. So what's my point? Prepare. Prepare for whatever's out there that's going to come. Just like Advent, where you're waiting for Jesus to come, well, this is the same thing. You got to wait, right, for whatever's to come here. We don't know where this is going to go. The other thing is this. My understanding is that they have different grades of gasoline and different additives to stabilize the gasoline, so if you have to keep it for a while, it's not going to degrade. I'm not going to endorse any of those products, but I'm just saying look into it. Now, one of the other things is, in the late 70s, you had a bicycle, 73, 74, mid-70s, you had a whole bicycle enthusiasm in the country. People went out and bought bicycles. It's always a good idea to conserve fuel, but now is the time where you really need to conserve fuel because if these prices keep going up, we're going to have an issue. Some other stuff here. Oil shock. Here we go. This is from telegraph.co.uk. Oil shock worse than the 70s. Iran war, largest disruption to crude supplies in history of the global oil market. Right? With that. I mean, I'll never forget on those lines. Here's one from CNBC. Strait of Hormuz must remain closed as tool to pressure enemy. Iran's new supreme leader says. No one's seen this guy. We don't know if he's in the hospital. We don't know what his situation is. But, he's putting things out there. And what the talking heads on mainstream media are saying, Ayatollah Khamenei, his father, didn't even want this guy in charge. He's a lightweight. Well, we're going to see how much of a lightweight he is. Remember during World War II, before World War II, they said that the Japanese could not launch an attack on Pearl Harbor because they had slanted eyes and they can't see. Right? That's what was back then. And they had, in turn, Japanese Americans like George Takei, Lieutenant Sulu, and then Captain Sulu of Star Trek fame. And, all these other things. I mean, one of my clients in Bayonne, New Jersey, has a facility that was right next door to a POW camp. And you could just see right where the POW camp was because it's like a 20-foot-high concrete wall. And they also put enemy aliens in there. So if you were of Italian descent, that's where they put you, right? There. But anyway, Iran's new supreme leader, Mujtaba Khamenei, said Thursday that the closure of the Strait of Hormuz maritime passage should be continued as a tool to pressure the enemy. his first public statement. Is this guy alive? Is he dead? I mean, we have oil prices all over the place. You're over 100 for Brent crude. They're predicting over 100, close to 200 bottles, $200 a barrel of oil. Here we have from the Epoch Times. U.S. aerial refueling aircraft crashes in western Iraq. The crash was not due to hostile fire, and rescue efforts are underway to locate and recover the crew of the downed KC-130 stratotanker. Now, I don't know how many of these stratotankers we have here, but I know it's not much. So let's plug it into AI here. We have, boom, three, oh, more than I thought, 396 KC-135, strato tankers, and that's 150, three in active duty wings, and then they have reserve force. Okay, I'm mistaken. But we don't have too many of them out there, is what I always thought, but crash there in western Iraq, they're not exactly sure what's going on. You know, they said, well, it's not because of hostile fire or accidental friendly fire. Right? Okay. Trump administration weighs allowing foreign ships to transport U.S. crude to domestic refiners. The president may issue temporary Jones Act waivers to send Gulf of America oil to domestic plants to boost volume and stymie skyrocketing fuel costs. They're talking about strategic petroleum reserve. This is out of, I'm reading this from the Epoch Times, and they have a picture of the Bayway Refinery here of Phillips 66 in Linden, New Jersey, a facility I know pretty well there. And they are looking, they are looking east. In the picture, if you go over the Epoch Times here, and those are some liquid natural gas spheres there, and then they have other stuff going on there that I'm not allowed to talk about. White House said the Trump administration is considering lifting restrictions on foreign-owned and crude ships transporting goods between ports in the United States in an effort to boost domestic oil refining and put the brakes on skyrocketing fuel costs. In the interest of national defense, the White House is considering waiving this Jones Act for a limited period of time to ensure vital energy products and agricultural necessities are flown freely into U.S. ports. Right? And what does it? The act requires that cargo traveling in domestic waters between U.S. ports be shipped solely aboard vessels that are U.S. built, U.S. citizen owned, and registered to the United States, which means crewed by Americans, according to the Department of Transportation's Maritime Administration. The waivers would allow foreign tankers to assist U.S. flagged tankers in shipping domestically produced crude oil to refineries within the United States, mitigating rising energy prices caused by shipping disruptions in the Strait of Hormuz. Right? Trump told tankers, allegedly, to show some guts, then they were bombed. President Trump told commercial ships waiting near the Strait of Hormuz to show some guts. The comment came during a Sunday interview with Fox & Friends co-host Brian Kilmeade, in which the president insisted Iran's military had been effectively neutralized by recent U.S. airstrikes. Tehran, he said, no longer had the capacity to threaten maritime traffic. And then they did. What's my point? We don't know where any of this is going here. I think everybody was very well-intentioned here with this in the administration, but it sometimes, you know, it's like I say, take your good intentions to the bank. Pay your mortgage with good intentions. And that was here. Now, here we go. Iran war. U.S. Navy will escort oil tankers through Strait of Hormuz when militarily possible, Vincent said. That's the Treasury Secretary Scott Vincent and being quoted by Sky News. Experts issue warning over how Iran could launch attacks on U.S. soil. So sleeper cells, the FBI alerted law enforcement about the possibility of drone strikes on the West Coast. Here, let's click on that. And that was leaked apparently. And then I don't know if they actually went out and released it. Boom. So Iran allegedly aspired to conduct a surprise attack using unmanned aerial vehicles. We mentioned this already, from an unidentified vessel off the coast of the United States homeland, specifically against specific targets in California, in the event that the U.S. conducted strikes against Iran, the alert obtained by ABC News said. We have no additional information on the timing, method, target, or perpetrators of this alleged attack. However, and this story doesn't say this, but as I previously said, the president said we know where they all are. We're watching them. Right? So which one is it? Right? I don't know. Are we going to have a whole bunch of people in a, where is that? The big Ferris wheel in California. Hold on. I don't have an engineer here. Was that Malibu that has the big thing? Yeah, Santa Monica area, the big Ferris wheel. We're going to have, are we going to have people up there with a shotgun? Right? And a radio? Right? Well, what's the plan out there? That was from the movie 1941. Funny John Belushi movie. Go and check it out. Is that what the plan is? Are we going to have people sitting on top of the Ferris wheel in Malibu waiting to shoot things out of the sky? I don't know. Are we going to start recalling things back to the United States? Like people have been calling for years? I don't know. Let's see what's going to happen. When they start moving things, people to around the coast and the Gulf of America, we might have an issue here. With Middle East in flames, Texan bunker maker sees the business boom. Since the war in the Middle East began nearly 2 weeks ago, the phone at Ron Hubbard's bomb shelter company in Texas hasn't stopped ringing. Foreign and U.S. clients are rushing by his bunkers seeking refuge in case of air raids, nuclear fallout, or apocalypse. With the United States and Israel pounding Iran and Tehran, retaliating with strikes across the region, Hubbard has seen demand for his products soar, mostly from Gulf nation clients in Bahrain, Qatar, Kuwait, and the United Arab Emirates. I wonder if he's related to the other one. L. Ron Hubbard, right? Russia is raking in billions, this is from Newsweek, because of Trump's Iran war. Russia has raked in nearly $7 million in fossil fuel revenues since the U.S. and Israel's strikes against Iran led to the near closure of the Strait of Hormuz, according to a new report. The Strait is a critical choke point. So Newsweek is now issuing conspiracy theories that might actually be true. What do you mean, Jim? Well, maybe Russia was running out of money, so let's figure out how we're going to up the revenue for the war, the Ukraine war. Hey! Let's close the Strait of Hormuz. I don't know. Is that what they're saying? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Hackers join U.S. and Israel's fight with Iran. Right? U.S. and Israeli military strikes on Iran are playing out in the war in the air and at sea. A parallel fight is folding online. Why it matters, Iranian actors, both state-linked and loosely affiliated, have a history of cyber attacks against the U.S. I think that the platforms we launched from here on Safety FM, I think they were impacted yesterday because I couldn't do certain things with the OBS system. The online broadcasting system was working. That's why we recorded and we released it today. A Wednesday cyber attack allegedly linked to Iran aligned hackers disrupted operations at Stryker, a major U.S. medical technology company, the Wall Street Journal reported. Stryker confirmed in a statement that it has experienced global network disruption to our Microsoft environment. Right? Here we go, and this was a little bit out of order. California law enforcement in response to unsubstantiated rumors. Law enforcement agents across the Bay Area and California say they are coordinating with federal authorities after reports surfaced of a potential Iranian drone threat targeting the state. Now, back in, I believe it was 2010-2011, there was an attack on California infrastructure in southern San Jose. I believe it was by Morgan Hill, Metcalf Road. That is where the old Pratt & Whitney facility used to be, which I did a cleanup on. And at the base of the hill, there was there is a substation for electrical, right, full of transformers and everything else. And somebody took a 50-caliber bullet, hit one of those things, and as if my memory recalls right. It took about 2 or 3 weeks for all the transformer oil to drain out and the power to go down. So on here and on Coast to Coast AM and many other things, we talk about energy issues. And here also how our power grid is vulnerable to EM pulses. Think of the, if you don't believe me, the Carrington event back in the 1860s, I think it was one of the most first and noticeable with that. Before that, we had St. Elmo's fires on ships, right, which is a similar phenomenon. Not only a 1980s era movie, right, with the 1980s Brat Pack, so to speak. And you could go look that up, too, where you actually have threats to the EM pulses. And what it is, and there was another movie, the remake of Red Dawn, several years ago, where you're able to take out all this electronic equipment with an electromagnetic pulse from, let's say, a nuclear weapon at a certain height, a certain altitude, localized stuff, and everything else. Now, let's remember that. The government has chosen not to spend the $2 or $3 billion to harden the grid. Right, in most cases, they spend it on everything else, but not on that. And that is one of our weak areas. So what am I saying? Learn how to protect yourself from an EM pulse. Make sure you have enough, you're prepared for this stuff. Disaster preparation. Maybe we need to go to ready.gov and review some of the stuff on that next week. Here we have from San Francisco Gate. A similar story. Emergency sirens in San Francisco won't sound alarm even during an Iranian drone threat. An FBI, right, with that. San Francisco's outdoor public warning system sirens are not likely to reactivate even among reports of possible drone attacks on the West Coast. And let's remember, there may be apps that are coming up here that may track stuff like this. You know, you never know. Some entrepreneurs out there may be wanting to have apps. Well, right now, last year I was tracking on the weather apps with the lightning alerts. I'm not going to mention the brand. Right out this window here, right? And the alerts for lightning strikes run anywhere from 6 to 12 minutes behind their occurrence. Because depending on what cell network you're on and everything else, again, if they're using the cellular network, that's going to be probably compromised, one of the things, especially if they got their groove node together and do a multi-vector attack on the power grid and everything else, whether the cell phone towers, the electric generating equipment, and a drone strike, you're not going to, these phones are going to be good for nothing. So what do you do? Right, the backup system for the nuclear industry has always been sirens. I know because we had one right up the street from me on Indian Point, which they're talking about reactivating. Congressman Mike Lawler, my congressman, is talking about reactivating the Indian Point nuclear power plant. So a little funny story, I went over to when we were looking for houses and Rockland County, my wife and I saw this house. Exactly what we were looking for. I mean, really exactly, no, the right size, the right thing, the right price. Really, we're like, wow, this is like real cheap. There must be something up, and it's in a gated community. And it's this cheap in a gated community and nice looking house, on the at least on the pictures. They must have hired one hell of a good photographer. We go over to the house, and I go up in it. Yeah, my wife is like, no, that house ain't for us. I said, well, let me go in it, at least be, no, it's an open house. Let me be polite. You know, and I like to meet people. I go in there, and I go into the kitchen, and if you are going to have and make a postcard of the Indian Point nuclear power plant, it was from that house, from that picture window in the kitchen. So you can be washing dishes and looking at the nuclear plant. I mean, it was like a postcard view of the place. And I said, well, that explains why it's so cheap with that. But anyway, the San Francisco Department of Emergency Management shut the sirens down over hardware issues and security issues in 2019. Originally expected to be upgraded at a cost of $2 million to $2.5 million. Repairs were never completed and sirens remained silent. And then, now this goes back and forth. Now, what the hell is it with California? That's my question. What the hell is going on in California? You have LA, January 2025. They have all those freaking fires there. If I ever make it there, I'll do a little report. All those freaking fires, they didn't upgrade their, they were like, I would have to go back and look, but they were like 65 fire companies short. No. No capacity to do this, to fight a fire that they knew would probably likely happen in a high fire frequency area. We're going to pay overtime and not hire more firefighters. We're going to do this. Before you know it, all the Pacific Palisades goes up in smoke. And the questions linger, and they're not letting them build. They're putting up roadblocks. More roadblocks than New Jersey had during Superstorm Sandy. Putting up all these roadblocks, there are reports, I would have to see it for myself. They've only rebuilt like a handful of houses, up to 100 houses out of their several, right? So my question is this, what the hell, if you're a California taxpayer, what the hell are you paying for? Oh, we don't have to worry about that. We don't have to worry about, no problem at all. Don't we have a fire, firefighters, don't need them. Increase the fire companies, don't need that. We don't need that. No. Qualified people running the fire service? We don't need that. We don't need the commissioner. What the hell? Come on. We got a realtor here, a medical doctor here, a retirement person here. And wouldn't you know, we also have a real estate developer here too. Wow. What an amazing coincidence that we have all these qualified people. My question is this. Who the hell at the Department of Emergency Management, who are the group of people who made this decision? Right? I don't know. Who in that legislature that runs this or on this committee or whoever it is would do that? Because apparently the the head of emergency management wanted to do this, but nobody else wanted to. Oh, that'll never happen. What about, we're going to be, how about this? Here, I'm going to share a screen real quick here. Is the Dubai dream over? And this was in dailymail.co.uk. Dubai is finished. Expats say they will never leave and never come back as tax-free dream is shattered by war. Officials begin prosecuting people for this. Guess what they're prosecuting people for? For posting videos of missile strikes and missiles. Right, we're going to talk more about that in a minute here. Here we have another one. Luxury apartment block in Dubai hit by Iranian drone. Here's one out of the Sun. Don't mention war. Dubai Brit who filmed and immediately deleted Iran missile blitz vid among 21 charged with cybercrime amid United Arab Emirates crackdown. Right, and here's we're going to go into this, and we're going to take a break. And a glass of nice, refreshing iced tea. World-renowned chef steps down amid shocking abuse scandal. I heard of this guy. Danish chef Rene Redzepi allegedly, right? These are all allegations and allegedly. I don't know if he did or not. Has stepped down from his world-renowned restaurant, Noma, after allegations of abuse. Redzepi, 48, co-founded the Copenhagen restaurant in 2003, quickly ascending the top of the culinary world, but dozens of employees have alleged verbal and physical abuse at Redzepi's hands in the 2010s, according to bombshell report in the New York Times. On Wednesday, he's announced that he's going to step down now. My question is this. These people honestly believe that there would never be a payday, whether they were in the restaurants. Right, and remember, you turn on the Food Network and some of the other things, and they don't have those chefs on too much now. They moved on with the yelling and the screaming and the intimidation. I remember, I know of two cases. One down in Woodstown, New Jersey, at a restaurant where somebody, the owner, went and screamed and yelled and cursed. They're not the owners anymore. At one of the help, and the help went home and committed suicide. She was having a bad day. Guy didn't think anything about it. That one I know personally. I know of another restaurant that did the same thing. That's no longer there anymore in the Woodridge, New Jersey area. Woman had psychological issues after that PTSD. She wasn't able to return to work. What the hell? What, we're okay with this? We're okay with this. Now we're going to talk. Well, let me go to break, and then we'll come back after that, right? With that. I got to calm down here.
Safety Wars is streaming now. SafetyFM.com.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that is designed to actually address and assess your hazards and liabilities and is not standardized baloney from generations ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call me, Jim Polzel, at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you are receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Polzel, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all with his engaging storytelling. Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Polzel and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy!
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars, with your host, Jim Polzel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Yeah, that's exactly what the hell we're doing. We're facing the harsh reality. Now, I just covered in the previous segment the whole thing. Well, Dubai is prosecuting people and charging people, and some of the other countries here over there too, my understanding. You can't go out and show bad news about the war, about apartment buildings being hit. In this country, United States, we get, we've proven time and time and time and time again on these shows. You're being manipulated. What's the word I'm looking for? I can't think of the word. You are being around by the news media, by the politicians, by the bank, by your bosses, by, in some cases, by your spouse and other family members. Withholding information. That's one of the classic ways that you could bully somebody, is by withholding information. Oh, yeah. That's in Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. That's in a lot of ways on how do you pick up with narcissists and sociopaths. Well, they only tell you the information you want. So, for example, I had a friend who you know, she was filling out Christmas cards. And she says, right, I haven't heard from this guy in years and a long time. I keep sending him Christmas cards. He never sends them to me. I think I'm going to cut him off on Christmas cards. What do you think about that? And me and the other guy she's talking to? So, well, if you haven't heard from him, he's not interested in maintaining a relationship. Maybe, you know, you want to just not do that. But I would find out why he's not doing it. And you know what she says? You want me to stop sending Christmas cards to a guy who's in a nursing home with no family? True story. So you're not getting the full story here. Would have been nice had I said that. Hey, he's in a nursing home. Hey, why don't you go and you see him for the holiday season, maybe? Call up the nursing home. Hey, is he open for visitors? Why don't you go? That would have been a nice thing. Hand deliver the card. Maybe that would be a better way of saying that rather than getting the answer, you know, oh, you are, you know, and it's like now all of a sudden I'm the son of a bitch here, right? With this. Here we have, and this is from the Christian Science Monitor. There are, and this was yesterday, the 15th anniversary. Didn't have time to get to it last night. And it's, and the other thing is, I didn't know what I wanted to say about this, but now this all works in really good, now appropriate time. 15 years after Fukushima disaster, Japan is warming up to nuclear power. When Japan restarted one of the 7 reactors at the largest nuclear plant in the world on January, many of the locals from nearby village of Kariwa, population of 4,200, were uneasy about it. Not the mayor, though. Right? And Shinda Hiru expressed his unwavering trust in the people who run the nuclear plant, reflecting a changing attitude toward nuclear energy in Japan. 15 years ago, yesterday, a powerful earthquake and resulting tsunami triggered the nuclear emergency at Fukushima. Japan's government responded by shutting down all 54 of the country's nuclear reactors, and in 2012 it even decided to phase out nuclear power generation. But today, Prime Minister Takichi Sane leading the charge, Japan is slowly putting nuclear power back in the center of its national energy policy. And it goes on and on and on. Now, let's review something here that happened in Japan. The Japanese people I have a lot of respect for. However, in their culture, they are, unlike a lot of others, like we are here, very servile. How do I know this while we are here? Back in the day when I wanted to do disaster prep, I was heavy duty into disaster preparation, giving seminars, giving talks. We didn't have this platform. I should have set the platform up then, but there were other things going on, blah, 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 blah. You have all these people, right? Oh, well, the government's going to prepare. The government, I trust the government. And these are like people in Central Jersey who are otherwise very, what's the word I'm looking for? Very skeptical of everything else. Well, disasters. Oh, well, we're going to. We can't let anybody out. Blah, blah, blah. We have no role in this. We are relying. The government has everything all figured out. Then what happened? I said, look, I worked with the CDC. Now it's 25 years ago. With the anthrax cleanups in New York City. I'm going to tell you, they're not prepared. The same thing, now they're reopening the investigation they want to do at some people. With why were the decisions made at Ground Zero with breathing air quality and the ambient air quality down there? Why were those decisions made? The air's okay, and now we have, what, 30-some thousand people come down? In the database, all these thousands of people dying from that. Oh, we're all very trusting. Jim, you don't know what you mean. And then what happened in 2012? Superstorm Sandy hits. And what happens there? Oh, holy shit, we're not prepared for anything. Well, and these people come up to me. Oh, well, we're not, from now we are interested. Well, we moved on. The time to prepare, again, you can, if you're going to prepare, you can only really do one or two things a year. Yeah, one or two things. Well, this is the year we're going to get our finances together. This is the year we're going to get off the grid as far as energy. We're going to maybe have our backups. We're going to get a generator. We're going to put in whatever you want to do with that. Pick one. Yeah, you can't wait until a disaster is about to happen to start with this. So what happened here in Japan? What do you think? I'm shocked that Japan, that Dubai and all these other countries are saying, don't do this, don't do that. We're going to prosecute you if you report this. First, there's no freedom of speech. Second thing is this. Look what they did in Japan. It was against the law in Japan to talk about the Fukushima thing in an honest way. It was, right, like, what were the radiation readings? What were the, is it safe? Is it this? Is it that? You had people over there, oh, we're going to believe in everything that the government's saying. And then, and it's a complete nightmare. And they basically had a news blackout on this stuff in Japan. And in some ways, they're still having a news blackout on it for the long-term effects. It's only been the foreign press that's been doing this. The other thing was this. The products coming from Japan, are they radioactive or not? That was questioned for a couple of years. Well, guess what? We weren't allowed to do screenings on that. People had to went out and got the surplus Cold War rad meters. I was one of them. And started taking their own readings. I was using it in training courses, all right, for a 40-hour Hazwoper. And everything, so what's my point? We're not told everything. I'm going to tell you, here. You heard it here. They ain't prepared, wherever you are in this country, they ain't prepared for civil defense, natural disasters often. We see this every year during hurricane season. We don't have the capacity. Look at what happened down with all those poor children down in Texas 2 years ago. This has been two years ago now coming up. So what you need to do is look out for yourself, number one, because you can't help anybody else. You're going to look out for yourself. Look out for your community, your family, your community. When I say community, start with your next door neighbors, if you can. Start with the people on your block. Start, develop networks. Talk to people. Go out there. Hi, I'm Jimmy Polzel. How you doing? Blah, blah, blah. Good to see you. And you talk to people. They don't want to talk, that's fine, but at least you get to, hey, I'm Jimmy Polzel. How you doing? I did this in my neighborhood with one of my neighbors. It's the Orthodox Jewish community in my neighborhood. Guess what? They don't normally associate with Goyim, with us. They don't. I'm not being anti-Semitic here. Very, very rarely. They're not bad people. They just like to keep in their own community, insular community. There are many communities like that. But guess what? I made it a point. Hey, introduce myself when you meet with hey. And I will mention, hey, Jim Polzel, I live down in that house. How you doing? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, what do you know? I'm a health and safety consultant. No, do disaster response work, disaster management work. I put that in. Okay, great to see you. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah. You own a business? Yeah, all right. You do a little bit of marketing. You go and you talk to this guy. You talk to the, hey, how you doing? The kids are playing out there. Hey, how you doing, kids? My wife does the same thing. First day of school, she gets all the children. She wanted to get all the children in the neighborhood for a group photo. Hey, we're all going to school. You folks are included. Here, come on over. They're very grateful. And then what happened? About 6 or 7 months later, they had a problem. I get a phone call. Hey, Jimmy, it's so-and-so up the corner from you. I'm having a little problem. Maybe you can help me out here. Yeah, what do you got? Well, good. Well, blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, I'm going to help out my neighbors here. I don't care who they are. Love them all. Wish them all well. That's what you got to do. Just build up some community. Get to know your people. One of the advantages of COVID, and I got to wrap this up here, right? We're at 54 minutes after the hour. One of the advantages of COVID was that everybody got tired of watching TV and being on the internet and went out. You got to meet your neighbors. Woman says to me up the corner, I've lived here for 15 years. I didn't know who the hell my neighbors were. oh, hey, yeah, and then we'd start talking here and there, and they're listeners to this program occasionally, great people, hey, blah, 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 hey, and we get to build a network, and that's how you do it. You build a network, talk to people. Work with your neighbor, get along with your neighbor. Become that leader in your community when it comes to disasters, when it comes to safety, when it comes to security, when it comes to different things. So we knew when we moved in, we know if we go to that house, there's a pediatrician there. So you have children, guess what? We may not be able to get an ambulance right away, but we got a pediatrician there. Over here, we have an RN, registered nurse, which by coincidence worked for my sister-in-law at a university. Right? And we had an emergency in the house and with a family member. And I said, now you can tell your boss that you were helping her father-in-law. Right? That's why you're late. Right? And, you know, you're here. We know this guy does this, this guy does that, this guy knows about small engines. So you have a problem with your lawnmower. This guy works with the fire department. That guy down the street, they have grandkids. They're both retired teachers. Okay, good. That's good. We have children in the neighborhood. We know this group here, blah, blah, blah. We know our neighbors. You get to know each other. And you work together. Where there's a problem, you work together. There's a disaster, work together. Educate. Become that leader in your neighborhood. That's all part of what we have up here, right here. Safety wars. That's all part of the safety war. Disaster preparation. That's it. Anyway, I ranted enough for tonight. Well, I will likely be, if you don't hear from me this weekend, you'll likely be hearing from me next week. And for Safety FM Network and Safety Wars, this is Jim Pozel signing off.
You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people, but somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast. With more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, the book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the Signal. For the first time, all 3 books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition, This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.